BNSF Railway Company. This is Garaki versus BNSF Railway Company. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Andrew Weeks, and I represent the appellant BNSF Railway Company in this matter. We are asking the court to vacate the district court's order filed on October 9, 2015, which vacated the district court's previous order dated July 28, 2015. And that July order, the court had dismissed appellee Garecki's case for lack of prosecution after it had been pending for 18 months. The reinstatement of Garecki's case destroyed BNSF's statute of limitations defense guaranteed by 45 U.S.C. Section 56 of the Federal Employers Liability Act. Garecki's complaint alleged an injury occurring on March 5, 2012. 3-year statute of limitations related to that injury ran on March 5, 2015. In resolving this appeal, there are two main issues. First, what is the appropriate standard for reinstatement? Second, does the record support the district court's order of reinstatement?
When Mr. Nelson said in open court to the district court judge that he had not received either the what we used to call the 275-day letter or the order of dismissal, did you have evidence to the contrary?
I think the district court's order reflects that it was served, by email to Richard Densmore, which was plaintiff's counsel of record in the amended complaint. Do I have evidence that Mr. Nelson did not receive that email? No. All I have is the district court file where there was certificate of service of both the notice and the order on counsel.
Did you have any evidence that Mr. Densmore actually received either of the emails?
As far as received, again, no, just the fact that they were served.
Did the court have a right to rely on the statement by counsel in open court?
I think the court, as the court indicated, the court was going to, as an officer of the court, accept Mr. Nelson's representation. However, I don't think that representation rose to good cause, which is the standard required by the local rule. So whether or not the court can consider that, I think the court could consider it, but I don't think that justified the decision that the court made.
Isn't that similar to what happened in the Jarrett case, that there really wasn't any evidence provided by the plaintiff? The plaintiff made the statement, or plaintiff's counsel made the statement in open court that the plaintiff's pregnancy had caused the delay, and in that case it had been dismissed 3 times. Here we only have 1 dismissal.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I think the important thing to distinguish Jarrett from the present situation is when you look at the previous reinstatements in Jarrett, those were by agreement of counsel. In other words, there was no issues with respect to the first 2 reinstatements as whether or not that was contested. When we got to the issue of the 3rd reinstatement, you're correct, it was the issue of pregnancy. That issue of pregnancy was the justification, it was the reason, it was the excuse given by the party in that case as to why they could not get the case ready for trial within the normal progression. Here, we don't have any evidence of what Mr. Garecki was doing. I understand he's a male, but there is no similar excuse such as a pregnancy or anything like that saying, I could not conduct discovery in this case because of X, Y, or Z. That's exactly what you have in Jarrett. What you have in Jarrett is you have somebody who, yes, it was the 3rd reinstatement after 2 were stipulated to, but there was a reason given, and the court relied on that reason in reinstating the case in Jarrett. I think this is more applicable to the Ahersch Inc. case. In that case, there was no record made by the party seeking reinstatement.
But that case dealt with reinstatement out of term. This is an interim reinstatement.
This is an interim reinstatement.
So that's a different standard of proof and a different standard of review by the court, isn't it?
I think ultimately, though, the decision gets down to that point is, was there a record to support the decision? Regardless of whether it's in or out of term, there still has to be some sort of evidence offered in favor of reinstatement. That also gets into my point about good cause, Your Honor.
Well, I think, to go back to Hirsch, there was simply no bill of exceptions from the hearing.
That's correct, but...
So, you know, here we have a bill of exceptions. It has at least the communication by counsel.
Correct. And Judge, what I would tell you is, I think what when we're dealing with Hirsch, you're correct, that there was no bill of exceptions. That's different than what we're dealing with here. Mm-hmm. But yet, we still have to look at the record that was made in that bill of exceptions. We still have to look at the transcript, and we have to decide, is that good cause? Mm-hmm. Because under the Fourth Judicial Local Rules, they specifically state that in order for a party to reinstate a case, they can only do so upon a showing of good cause. So that's the standard. Regardless of whether you're in term or out of term, within the local rules require good cause, and that's what the court had to find.
So it's the district court's call as to whether or not good cause has been shown or not, and then it's your burden to show an abuse of discretion. Is that correct?
I believe that's how I would analyze it, Your Honor, yes, is that this court looks at the district court's determination of finding of good cause and find whether or not that was in itself an abuse of discretion, make that finding of good cause.
And when Mr. Nelson told the court, in open court, as an officer of the court, that he had not received either the 275-day letter or the notice of dismissal, the court chose to rely on that.
I agree with that, Your Honor, and I think there's two issues. I think one is you look at, A, what happened while the case was pending for 18 months. There's a separate issue of why did I wait 3 months before I asked to have this case reinstated? Those are two separate things. I think, first of all, when you look at the record in this case, the only record is that the plaintiff didn't take any depositions, didn't serve any discovery, didn't do anything to prosecute his case in the 18 months it was pending. And Mr. Nelson stipulated that he didn't disagree with anything in Exhibit 1, my affidavit that laid out everything that BNSF did and that the plaintiff had done nothing. So that's first is, what is the justification for why we didn't do anything in the 18 months? The second question
is... Well, they participated in discovery. They responded, the plaintiff responded to your discovery. In fact, there were medical depositions taken just a couple of months before this case was dismissed.
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, those are BNSF's efforts.
Right, but the plaintiff's participating.
Reluctantly. I think as you'll see in the affidavit, we had to agree upon an extension. Even after the agreed upon extension of discovery responses, mm-hmm. they were still late. We tried to schedule depositions and got no response. We noticed those depositions up. We're then told that counsel had a conflict. So everything that BNSF did to expend money, time, resources in this case was either met with neglect or met with resistance in terms of trying to conduct discovery. BNSF also offered to confess judgment in this case in the amount of $25,000, which was never accepted by the plaintiff.
It was rejected, wasn't it?
I don't think there's any evidence it was rejected. It was actually filed in the court as an offer to confess. So I don't think that there's evidence that it was rejected.
The fact that counsel claims that they did not receive these notices, does that in and of itself establish good cause?
Not in my opinion.
Because if the court has not given counsel the opportunity to set the matter for trial, or say that we're ready for trial, and goes ahead and just dismisses it without giving them any notice, why would that not be good cause?
Two reasons, Your Honor. First of all, the failure to receive in this case, in my opinion, just shows further dilatory behavior on the part of plaintiff and his
so
counsel.
So you don't believe him?
I'm not saying I don't believe him. I'm saying
so
that...
It's not going to be dilatory if they...
Because he has the ability to get on justice like anybody else and check on the progression of his case. Additionally, Your Honor, he is on notice from the Nebraska Supreme Court rules. The Nebraska Supreme Court rules provide that civil cases in district court cases have an 18-month progression standard. So when he files that case, he knows that's on an 18-month progression. And once it gets to that 17-month, if he's not seeing that notice of intent to dismiss coming, he should at least be checking justice to see whether it has been served and he didn't receive it. Any other questions at this time?
Yeah, anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice.
Good morning.
Members of the Honorable Court, my name is Jay Nelson, and I am willing to stipulate that Mr. Garacki was not pregnant at any time during this case. Cases don't operate in a vacuum, Your Honor. Your Honors. with respect to what had happened prior to this case, there was quite a bit of activity. The case took months to prepare answers as we were served with interrogatories and subparts in excess of 36, more than what the rules allow, and 40 requests for production, all of which, and wasn't mentioned here, were responded to fully and without any objections. Yes, it did take 2 months to get them to them. That was served in March of 2014, and full answers and responses that were verified by Mr. Garacki were provided in May of 2014. The deposition of plaintiff was requested by the defendants. Plaintiff's counsel agreed. It produced him voluntarily at our offices in Omaha, and the deposition was taken in August of 2014. Depositions, too, don't happen in a vacuum. Counsel would have you believe that plaintiff did nothing more than passively show up. Of course, depositions require lots of preparation. They require lots of record gathering. They require all sorts of efforts to get the plaintiff and everyone up to speed so that the thing can be done in an efficient manner. And that's what happened in this particular case.
Let me interrupt you here. I want to move to when you appear at the hearing on your motion to reinstate. And I'm not questioning the accuracy of your statement to Judge Doherty that you had not received the email notice from the court. But I noticed that on the pleading in this case, the amended complaint, that there were three attorneys of record for the plaintiff. There was Mr. Dinsmore listed first, you're listed second, and then a Katie Figgins is listed third, and I take it at that time all three of you were attorney of record. Is that correct?
The filing of the case, yes.
Okay, all right. And then on January 16, Ms. Figgin files an unopposed motion to withdraw where she states at that time that the handling of this case will continue by you as lead counsel.
She had left our firm, I want to say, in 2015, so although I don't recall the exact date, but she was no longer counsel. When she saw that she received some notice, she asked for a formal withdrawal.
So
this was granted.
As of January of 2015, were you now lead counsel on the case?
Yes.
Did you notify the court of that?
Well, my name has been on all of the pleadings since the very inception of the case. And my understanding is that after this happened, I was very alarmed. This is the sort of thing that keeps lawyers awake at night, not receiving a notice of intent to dismiss, and I found out that the district court was, for whatever reason, it wasn't sending it to my email, and got all these things squared away. But that was the issue in this case.
Had it been sent to Mr. Dinsmore's email?
I had access to his email at all times, and one of my duties was always to check Mr. Dinsmore's email. So when I represented that we hadn't received it, I meant we hadn't received it either by my personal email or Mr. Dinsmore's, both of which were provided to the court, which were on record.
And was Mr. Dinsmore still an attorney of record at that time?
Yes.
Was the email that the court had for Mr. Dinsmore accurate at the time?
Yes. Yes.
So Mr. Dinsmore did not receive either the 200, what I call the 275-day letter, or the order of dismissal, or the notice of the order of dismissal?
Neither Mr. Dinsmore nor I received those.
And was that information, all of that detailed information, conveyed to the court at the time of the hearing?
I can't recall the exact words I used, but I told the court and represented to the court that none of the email addresses that we use for our office received notice that this case was going to be dismissed. And that's really what this was about. The court did not make a determination that we were dilatory in prosecuting the case. The court's electronic administration system produced this notice and emailed it out. At least that's how this works. And then if there's no pretrial scheduling order filed within 30 days, then the case is automatically dismissed. There was no person making a decision on this case. Something wasn't done. We were therefore dismissed for lack of prosecution.
Is the Douglas County District Court handling these all by email now?
Yes.
As opposed to letters by regular mail?
Yes. Yes. If I think the rule is that, and I'd have to review it, but if you include an email address in your signature block, then it is presumed that you can receive email and all notice by that email. I believe that's the rule. At any rate.
Does the record reflect that you presented a proposed scheduling order at this hearing?
It does, and I did. Okay. The order itself says that I presented a scheduling order in accordance with the local rules at the time that the hearing was held, and that the court found that there was a good enough reason to reinstate the case. As the court noted earlier, there had been no previous dismissals. There was a record of activity in the case, which included responses to written and discovery, to cooperation with depositions, and then, of course, as was noted earlier, the cooperation with scheduling and then taking the depositions of two of the expert witnesses, treating physicians in this case. Again, things that don't happen in a vacuum. Physicians require a lot of work to get to a deposition point. First, they have to be convinced to be a part of a case at all, which obviously happened in this case. They were named, and they did participate. Then we had to, of course, supply these physicians with all of the records they had to be met with, and of course they had to be paid for all these services, all of which I handled after the defendants requested their depositions. So this isn't a case where nothing happened for a long period of time. There was plenty happening in this case, and I believe the record does have our written response to the offer to confess. I mentioned that in response to the defendant earlier, but we did turn down the offer to confess.
When the rule says that you have to present evidence to the court to show good cause why it should be reinstated, is simply standing up in open court sufficient to meet that rule?
I think the evidence is viewed as a totality.
Well, but arguments of counsel aren't evidence.
I agree. Representations of counsel, though, can be taken notice of by the court, and that's what happened in this particular case. Of course, they also had the evidence that the defendant had given them, the things that had happened to date in that case, which I believe the court can fairly rely upon as a gauge of what's happening in the case. Good cause shown here is that the case continued to move forward. Things were happening, and even though I didn't serve written discovery prior to the dismissal, it was, in fact, served after we were reinstated, but it was pending after this appeal was made, that things were moving forward.
Your statements to the court, though, were not under oath.
I believe, and I would have to go back and look at the transcript, Your Honor, but I believe that the court asked me, is that what you're something words to the effect of, is that what you're representing to this court? And I said, yes, Your Honor, what I'm representing to the court is I had access to all of the firm's emails. We did not receive notice. We did not receive notice of dismissal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did the appellant have any time left?
Yes,
35
seconds.
Okay.
Real quickly, Your Honor, to address Judge Inbody, no, Mr. Nelson was not under oath, reflected in the Bill of Exceptions. Before my time expires, I just want to talk real quickly about equities. When this case was dismissed on July 28, 2015, Mr. Grecki was over 4 months out of time on the statute of limitations period. As Mr. Nelson just indicated, this is an automatic procedure. In other words, there would be a very minor burden on him to put in his calendar on the 17-month anniversary of the filing of the complaint that he should be receiving a notice of intent or file a scheduling order. So there is notice in that respect. We would ask the court again to vacate the October 9th, 2015 order. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. We have it under advisement. We thank you for being here, and counsel is excused.